The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2016 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2016. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at accsedu.org.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and start. Thanks for bringing me back. Someone just asked, and I want to answer the question right up front, if I am out of some handouts up in the back. If you sign up on the sheets back there, then I can share a Google Drive that will have the entire presentation that you see. So that's a good way for us to keep in touch also. My name is Kathy Meir, and I'm an art teacher at St. Stephen's Academy. I'm from Beaverton, Oregon. I have been teaching at that school for 15, 16 years. I teach K through 12 art, studio art, and drama. And I've taught K through 12 drama. This next year, it's going to be 6th through 8th grade drama. And it'll be a class during the day, which I've never done before. It's always been an after school activity. So that's kind of fun. I started working at a classical school before I brought my kids there. My kids served in a public school, and I had contracts with public schools. And my oldest son, who's now at the George Fox Honors Program, and the George Fox people will be here later today, the William Penn Honors Program in Newburg, Oregon, graduated from St. Stephen's. My daughter graduated last year from St. Stephen's, and I still have a high schooler at that school. But my oldest son, when he started there in seventh grade, so he did the public elementary school, and he started in seventh grade. His first day of school, I'm going to tell you a funny story, because it's kind of a personal story about me, but it's my son telling the story, so I'll switch voices so you know who's talking. My son was, what are they in seventh grade, 12 years old? His first day of school, he happened to have art. His class had art. At our school, art is required every year, so every student gets it every week, every year. And I am blessed to teach every single one of those classes. So I get to watch them grow, and I get to keep track of their skills, so it's pretty fun for me. This coming year, I have an assistant teacher that's going to take over three classes, which is kind of scary because I don't like giving them up. But anyway, back to my story with Austin. So his first day of school, he stands up in front of all of his brand new friends in their middle school, the most nervous time of their life, right? He stands up in front of them, and I'm going to tell you a story about my mom. And he tells a story like this. A long, long time ago, when dinosaurs roamed the earth. And my mom was in first grade. She got an F in art. And then he didn't quite know how to finish the story, but I kind of interjected and said, yes, I did get an F in art. And then he butts right in, being a 12-year-old boy. And her reaction was, no! And he fell to the ground, flat out, first day of school, 7th grade. It was very funny. And, in fact, that was the truth. I did get an F in art. And here's the real story. I don't know how many of you are old enough to remember mimeograph machines. But when I was in first grade, we still had a mimeograph machine, and my teacher, bless her heart, we must have been studying coloring or yellow or something. Anyway, she gave me a mimeograph color book page of a pear. And I colored it just perfectly. After all, I was an artist. I was in first grade. I colored it darker on one side and lighter on the other, and I did not go outside the lines, and I didn't leave anything white. And she gave me an F. And I cried and cried and cried, and she put her hands on her hips and says, young lady, pears are not green. I grew up in Medford, Oregon, where Harry and David was founded. I had green pears in my house. We had brown pears and yellow pears and peachy colored pears and reddish pears. And anyway, to move the story on, I decided I was going to be a teacher when I grew up. I decided that year. And I was going to be an art teacher. And I got derailed along the way. I don't think I became an art teacher or a teacher at all for probably 20 years into my adulthood. But I did own an art gallery for a while. And before that, I had several solo gallery shows. And my first professional painting I sold for over $500 was a watercolor, a great big one, of green pears. And the title The title was, you can guess it, Pears Are Not Green. So I tell that story the first week of school every year in my class to every single class. It's pretty fun. Some of the kids will tell it all along with me, the ones who've been with me for a long time. But they enjoy that story because they feel like I'm going to connect with them somehow. Now, I am a very strict teacher, as artists go. I'm the loosest one in my building, but I still am a classical school teacher, so I do have lots of structure and scope and sequence and all the stuff that you have. How many of you are art teachers? Okay. How many elementary art teachers? And high school art teachers? Awesome. More elementary than high school, but it's good. It's better balanced than what I thought. So my presentation today, From Crayons to Rembrandt, is a culmination of a master's project that I wrote. Did you all get a chance to see the ACCS art show winners that were on stage this morning? They should be back out in the lobby if you didn't get to see them later on today. Last year, I had two students on stage. This year, none. But that's how things go, right? Ebbs and flows. You have winners and you don't. I will talk later about contests, but my philosophy about contests is that they're really not that important. They're fun, and it's great to win, but winning does not make you a better artist, nor does losing make you a worse artist. I have won and lost many, many contests. Doesn't make it any different. And so I have my kids enter lots of contests because they do have benefits, but I always start, whenever I do the award ceremonies, that's the speech I give to all the kids. So that, because some of them are disappointed. And I tell them that that's okay to be disappointed. It's just like getting a C on a history paper. It's okay to be disappointed. But you just work harder, and you congratulate your friends that got the A or the first prize. So, anyway, let's go back to running. Before, I had slides of just some artwork that I had, which I'm happy to show you all again. But let's get to the presentation. From Crayons to Rembrandt. First thing I do when I teach any grade, it doesn't matter what grade, we have warm-ups. So I ask the kids how many take music lessons or do sports or things like that and ask them if they do warm-ups. And, of course, the answer is yes. They do lots of warm-ups. So we do warm-ups in art, too. Sometimes we draw different lines. It's different each day. Pardon me. Sometimes we do 10-second contour drawings. If you don't know what contour drawings are, it's just I just hold up something and have them draw the outline of it. And then we go into blind contour, which is the most hilarious thing we do all year. I don't blindfold them, but I don't let them look at their paper. So they have to look at what I'm holding. And since I'm the one holding it, I can tell if they're cheating or not because they have to look at me. So I tell them that so they know I can tell. And then after we do that for 10 seconds, and I let them look at what they're doing, and laughter just abrupts. I have teachers walk down the hall, "What are you doing in here?" Because they'll be silent, and then this abruption of laughter. So it's pretty fun. So that's a very fun warm-up. I have little worksheets that I can share with you on the Google Drive. I'm just going to show you a sample of just two here just in a second. But I have worksheets. A lot of the worksheets are in the book by Mona Brooks called Drawing for Children and Drawing with Older Children and Teens. Really, really super good resource. I've never met her in person, but she teaches a lot the same way I do, where lines connect. Instead of, when I learned, we learned to make all the circles where all the joints or pressure points were and then connect them, and that doesn't make any sense to younger children. So I like the Mona Brooks method, which is also my method. I don't know which came first. I do have negative space worksheets and space or shapes worksheets, too. Here's a couple samples of the warm-ups. So I just have them copy in the space next to it what they see. And it's just to get their mind in my room, because my room is down the hall from everybody else's, so I just need to get their shift going. Elementary students complete one project a week at the beginning of the year, and it's step by step. We do it all together, all at the same time. I do it, then they do it. I don't even give them the next color paint until I'm ready to use it, because when I first started teaching, I had these grand ideas, and I poured out the paint and the shape of the color wheel, lined up all the brushes, and everything was just beautiful. And within 10 seconds, we all had dinosaur green because elementary school students like to stir. So I only give them the color when I want to use it. Later, as their skills progress, I take 2 or 3 weeks per project. And then that's when they're learning how to do individual feathers on a bird or individual hairs on a dog, things like that. Okay. I teach all grades, K through 12, from the art elements. And then the imagery, I also teach by an image. So never in my classes are we going to have page after page of color mixing or gradations or shading exercises. Maybe in a warm-up for about 10 minutes, maybe not even 10 minutes, maybe 5 minutes for a warm-up. But I teach them the element that I want them to learn with a finished picture that goes in their portfolio at the end of the year. It makes them feel more accomplished. Parents are really happy when there's lots of finished work that can go on the wall. I used to teach only privately for money. Now I don't do that. But and parents, when they were paying for lessons, really wanted stuff to go on the wall, so that's why I changed this. But then I found that it's really good in a classical system also because it's step by step, but there is an end goal with this beautiful image. So the art elements I teach from: line, shape, color, texture, composition, and space. Of course, there's lots more when the kids get older with the perspective. And I teach photography. I teach printmaking. I teach clay and glass. I'm the only art teacher in the building, so I have to do it all. I have to work it all in. So for line, this lesson, which there was a handout for this one in the back, this is one I do with second grade. Now, page 2, or the back side of it, are more complicated ones. Those would be more for 4th, 5th, and 6th grade. But the first page with the square, I do that in 2nd grade. It's very, very hard in 2nd grade. One of the speakers I heard yesterday was talking about teaching above their heads. Did you guys all hear? I can't remember who taught that one, but I thought it was great. I wrote it down in my takeaway notes, that teach above their heads, because that's why we're here, to teach them something, right? Well, teaching above their heads is really frustrating, as you know, when they don't get it. And in 2nd grade, there could be tears if they don't get it. And so that, I have to, kind of pull up my britches when I'm teaching this, because I'm not sure they're going to get it, because I'm not sure they know how to use a ruler and keep it still, and you have to use a ruler with this project. So in all my handouts, I try to put time needed. So the little clock there will tell you about how much time it takes to finish this project with children. The way I figure that out, typically, is however long it takes me, I times that by 10 or 15 times. That's how long it's going to take in the classroom. So if you're an artist, if you can do it in 5 minutes, it's going to take an hour in your classroom. And that accounts for questions, passing out materials, the 4 kids who never, ever get it, that you have to keep going over and helping them, or have your parent volunteer come help, things like that. The curriculum enhancements, these are just based on my own experience. It's not necessarily any kind of ACCS or state standard. Sometimes it matches and sometimes it doesn't. That's just my thing. The benchmark section, in the state of Oregon, we used to use benchmarks, create, present, perform. And so I based a lot of things on that. Now they have core standards, which I don't understand. I'm glad I don't, because I hear it's going away. I don't know that for sure, because I'm not one of those kinds of people. Anyway, once you get the Zentangles, which lots of Zentangles are available on Pinterest and online. Most artists and art teachers love Pinterest. I love Pinterest. You get lots of great ideas. Once they get this one, the square one, then you can move on to doing Zentangles in other shapes, even the full United States. If you're teaching a geography lesson, you can have each state be its own little Zentangle and build the United States. It's a great one. I do a similar one in 6th grade. I'll show you later. Okay, let's move on to shape for the elementary school. Before I start this lesson, I always start the whiteboard before any paint or paper or anything is handed out. And on the whiteboard, I'll explain to them shapes are divided into 2 groups. Those would be organic and geometric shapes. When the kids are really young, They can't spell or even say organic very well, so we say the shapes come from nature. They live at Nature Town. The geometric shapes live in Geotown. Kids love that. By third grade, they have to use the real vocabulary, though. I won't accept them using Nature Town and Geotown, except for when we're talking about memories from first and second grade. So we'll write up all the shapes we can think of and the two groups on the whiteboard, and then we'll do this lesson. So you can see the first part with the snowman shape is our geometric shapes, and the ears are a half of a circle. That's a geometric shape. And then we go into the organic shapes with the kidney bean, an L shape, a banana shape, and a Hershey Kiss shape for the one leg. And then they're finished. It's a quick painting. They're finished in one day. I can probably finish this one, depends on how much time I spend at the whiteboard, in 30 minutes with a group of kindergartners. This is a kindergarten lesson, this one is. You can do it with the first and second graders, but it's really good with kindergartners. Anybody have any questions? Am I going fast, too slow? Yes. Question is, how often do I see my students? Every student in my school has art once a week. Kindergarten has 60 minutes. Everybody else has 90 minutes. So I think I'm blessed. What do you guys think? Do you think once a week for 90 minutes I'm pretty blessed? Yes. You will. This particular one, I have actually tested. I took it to a bunch of friends of mine in the public school, much like you, that they are not artists or art teachers. They just wanted a fun thing, and they did it as a math lesson. So it's a great cross-curriculum. This one matches math. I like to have most of my grammar presentations match somebody's curriculum. So this one, I just handed them the paper. Did you get one of the papers in the back? Okay. Put your name on the email list, and I'll send you one. I just handed them the piece of paper, and I walked out of the room. I didn't even want to stay and help or watch to see what they did because I wanted to test the lesson. That's the best way, right? And then I went in at the end of the day to look at the finished artwork, and it looked just like my students did it then. No, I gave it to some teacher friends of mine, and they did it with their kids. Yeah. Yes. The warm-ups, I just do between 5 and 10 minutes each day. So, and if they're in the middle of, if it's a two-week project, we don't do warm-ups. They just get their stuff out and get right to work. Sometimes if I know it's going to take me a long time, I skip the warm-ups too. But the kids like the warm-ups. They have fun with them. Any other questions? Should I push the button? Here is another one for shapes. It says primary colors on there. You can use it for primary colors. I have a different one I use for color. This one I do the same thing. I use this one for second grade. I do the same thing on the board with the organic and the geometric shapes. And then we use squares and triangles and circles to build the birdhouses. I also teach everybody in my school clay. I have a kiln. And every year we do houses, and that's a shapes lesson as well. So they make the squares and the triangles to build this clay house. And then we have holes in the bottom, so I light them up at Christmas time for our Christmas program, and we have a Christmas village, and then they take them home that night. And we do it every single year so the families can build their own Christmas village at home. And I've tried to stop doing it because now when I started this, we had 33 students, and now we have 280. And to fire that many houses and get them all on display, I tried to stop, and there was a revolt. I said, okay. But you have to volunteer in my classroom if I do it, so I get volunteers that way. So this is basically the same thing. All the lessons I've done have the same format. So they are, I give the time needed, supply list, and then the step-by-step, what to do first, second, and third. Here's the color lesson that I do. This one is for first grade. You can do these with any elementary, but I found that this is a nice one for first grade. Very simple. It doesn't even take the full hour that we might be painting. So sometimes if there's paint left over and time left over, they get what's called free draw or free paint time. So they get to paint whatever they want. And they love that. And I'll let them stir until their heart's desired. And then I wash it all away. This one is for 6th or 7th grade color theory. So by the end of 1st grade, they know what color opposites are. And complementary pairs. So they know how to mix those colors and all the primary, secondaries, tertiary colors. We've gone over value, tint, tone, shade, hue, all of those color theory vocabulary words. And so at 6th grade, I basically just kind of, I do it step by step still, but I'm just doing it so that they know what order to do it in. Because they know how to use the oil pastels. They know how to shade by then. We've done shading lessons, things like that. So this particular lesson that, you know, one thing that I stress with all my students is to do one shape at a time or one color at a time, one feather at a time, one hair at a time. They say, Mrs. Muir, how do I draw a duck? One feather at a time. It's really important that they do one at a time, even though you're going to start every orange the same way. You're going to color it all yellow, then put a layer of orange, then the layer of red, then the dark green into the red to make the shadow. You're going to do each one exactly the same, but one at a time. And I literally, here's where the strict part of me comes in, is if I see them coloring across all the oranges, I take their paper away and give them a fresh, clean, beautiful white one to start again. It's really important to do one at a time. I don't do that very often, but sometimes they just have to understand early. The earlier the better, one at a time. So at the on the second page, you can see that where their creativity comes in, of course, I don't care how many oranges they put on there. I like odd numbers, but I don't require it. I just tell them that I like it, so then I get odd numbers. So 9, 11, I think my sample has 11. If theirs are really tiny, they might put more, 13 or 15, but I tell them it's going to take them longer, the tinier, because you still have to do them one at a time. So if you have 7 or 17, it's one at a time. And then their design on their plate is individual. Everybody does the individual ones. The differences you can see if you have the handout, or I'm not sure how clear this is with the lights all on these slides, but one day, one class, I don't know, I was out of blue pastels, and so we used blue Sharpies instead. Color is great, but I don't like Sharpies. I don't like markers. They have their place, I guess, but they don't make great fine art because they don't blend. You can't blend them. And so, I know there are ways. I'm getting a frowny face. There are ways. You can mix alcohol with them. And if it's on fabric, you can definitely blend them really easy. And I'll show you some beautiful work that some of my students have done with Sharpie. Their shoes. But you'll see it. You'll love it. Okay, so when we go to texture. My students all do ducks every year. It matches our science curriculum in 4 grades. We have an art contest with ducks through the National Federal Fish and Wildlife Department. It's called the Junior Duck Stamp Design Contest. We've had lots of students win, place, or show in that contest. And I'll give you the website for that contest later. You can write it down when it comes up on the slides here. So the one on the both of these are first place winners. The one on the left is an 11th grade girl who won first place, and this one on the left was also the first place here at the ACCS contest last year, if you were here. And she has the same last name as I do. Because my daughter did that one. She graduated last year. This was her 11th grade project that she did. The one on the right is from this year. It was an 8th grader. She also got first place. And you can see how hard they worked to do one feather at a time. The one on the left is an acrylic painting. The one on the right is chalk pastels on suede paper. Suede is the best thing to use if you use chalk in your or soft pastels in your classroom. Suede paper is super, super expensive, like off the charts. One sheet that is 32 inches by 40 inches is $58. But I cut it up into 9 pieces, so that's $58 in 9 pieces. I don't let younger kids use it. It's only for 7th grade and up. Because of the price, because I know those kids are trained well enough to where they don't have to start over. They can color over it. It's pretty forgiving, although you can't erase on it at all. You just have to color over it, but it's pretty good. It's It's a great result. It teaches pastels really easily. It keeps the dust down. I'm allergic to pastels. So the kids all have that. That's kind of a little personal fun joke, too, that the teacher will stop breathing, and I've taught them all how to call 911 when we're using chalk. They don't blow. They can rub it and shake it. I have to keep the windows open, doors open. Once in a while, I have to walk out. I love the look of them. I still use them myself, too, but only on the swig. It's the only way I can keep the dust out of the air. My throat literally does close up when we use them. But they're great on the suede. Okay. Here's a painting that shows texture. I love texture. This one, we use the smooth, I use brush stroke to teach the texture in this one, so they know that the sky and the water is going to be side-to-side brush strokes. The snow is going to be at an angle. The trees and the foliage in front is tapped on so the paint builds up. Even though it's tempera paint, it will still build up. You can do this one with acrylic paint, too. Same exact instructions. A beautiful texture. I happen to do this one in second grade. I make a collage of these with some Bible verses kind of laid over the top for our auction. That's the second grade auction project. Big, big seller. This one, do any of you have to teach art literacy or art history with your art? Are you the, okay, great. I have been art literacy, I don't know what they call me, consultant. I write their curriculum for the public schools in my area for, I don't know, 23 years. I've been writing their art literacy curriculum. So I've got notebooks and notebooks on every artist and a project to go with every single artist and all the slides. This one was with Jonathan Green. He's African-American painter. And it's a great one with texture, physical texture. So this one we're using the back of the brush. I take mat board and cut it with pinking shears to get a zigzag edge that we can drag through the paint. So that's a really fun thing for the kids to do and different. And it's easy to throw away. I don't have to build up a lot of tools and do all that. So that's a really fun one. And this part is just the project for Jonathan Green. I don't have in the slides all of the biography and all of it. If you want any of that, I think my email is in your book at the top of the page, my email. If you want more on art literacy, email me and I'll send you whatever I can find. I teach a lot in composition. Starting in fifth grade, we talk more about composition. Before that, it's always in there, but I don't really tell them that I'm doing it. Same with perspective. Sometimes the perspective lesson is just as simple as things that are far away look smaller, and try to get them to understand which is bigger, a tree or a sun, or the mountain or the tree. And in the picture, it's inverted, of course, from what we know. So that's how I kind of start perspective. And then by fifth grade, I'm starting with the rulers and the vanishing points, doing two-point perspective. Sixth grade, they have to master the two-point perspective. It's on a test. Test, you know, they have to do a little drawing and hand it in. That's their test. At ninth grade, I have a full an eight-page art test, and I start telling kids about it about first grade. You'll have to take a test in art someday, and they all freak out. And then, you know, when they get it, it's like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, here's what I do. I don't know if this is right or not, but here's what I do. So each project has a grade, and I weight that grade depending on how many weeks it takes us to do it. So something that takes 6 weeks is six times as valuable in a quarter grade. So this is what I do from fourth grade on. Kindergarten through third grade is just participate and execute. It's 50 points and 50 points. Are they doing what they're supposed to do for participation? They're not acting out. They're not throwing paint. They're engaged in what we're doing. And 50% is, did they get it done? Did they execute it well? So starting in fourth grade, I break that second 50% down. 10% is skill. Seems really unfair for me as an artist, you know, to judge your kid as an artist. And a lot of people say they have no art skills. Art can be learned. To be an artist cannot be learned, but art can be learned. You can learn to draw, and you can learn to draw well, even if you're not an artist in here. So 10% is skill. So that means that only 10 points out of 100 I'm going to grade, and nobody really gets lower than a 5. If you're using all of the tools I've been teaching you all along, you're not going to get lower than a 5. So that's where I start with parents. You know, even if they cannot draw anything, you're guaranteed a 95 if you do everything like I've taught. So 20 points is, did they get it done in the time that I allowed? Because remember, way back 25 minutes ago, I said I 10 to 15 times what it takes me to get it done for them to get it done. And I really do think that's reasonable. And if the entire class is taking an extra week, then I will extend it an extra week. If it's the same 4 kids all the time, I don't do that. So 20% or 20 points, did you get it done? And the last 20 points is use of materials. And that is clarified by the use of materials as I have taught them to you. So my viewpoint of a 12th grade use of materials is different than a 5th grade use of materials. I expect the paint to be a lot better applied by that 12th grader than I do by the 5th grader. Because the 5th grader doesn't know what brush to use. 12th grader should know by then, because I've been harping on, I've got literally probably 4,000 brushes. I mean, so I'm teaching them how to choose their brush, what size to brush based on what size of paper, what you want the brush to do, hard brush, soft brush, two hair brush, which are usually just the ones that are really worn out. Did that answer your question? Okay, so 50, 20, 20, 10. That's how I do it. I did this year for the first time, got an angry email from a parent because their child got a B+ in art. Fourth quarter, and all the other 3 quarters, they got A's. And when I looked back, the difference was 1 point. This girl had gotten 90s all along, and for some reason, fourth quarter got an 89. So I explained to her that, in my opinion, an 89 and a 90 are the same thing. Your skills are the same. It's just that as teachers, we have to draw the line somewhere, right? And so then I had to kind of be really strong and hard and did not change her grade. And they had a huge family problem, and I could have easily changed the grade just based on my compassion. But this girl has potential, and I really want her to work a little bit harder because she could change that 90 to a 98. And so anyway, that was the first time in 15 years that somebody has called me on grades. But it does happen. So you must have a structure rubric in place. So this picture, the tulip fields with Mount Hood in the background. Mount Hood is a big volcano near my house. I see it every day. We paint it 3 or 4 times a year. Everybody does, because it's just right in our faces. So tulips are also big where I live. And so this one is, I have lots of variations of this painting. So this one can teach space, depth, 1-point perspective. You can use it as a texture lesson. You can use this one for lots of different things. At one time, I used this one for a math lesson because it was radiating lines. And I had a teacher come to me and said, our math scores are really down. Can you help me? And I said, yes, I can do that. I can help the music teacher, the science teacher, the geography teacher, math teacher, everybody, with an art project. So all the steps are there. You can use acrylic paint, tempera paint. I did this one time as a mosaic with little tiny leftover colored pencils. And we did them, so it was a great lesson. I also added a hot air balloon. So it was a 3rd grade class project. It took us the entire quarter, and it was huge, great, great big thing. And I had all these leftover pencils, and I was about to toss them in the garbage. And I said, oh, I can do something with that. And so I thought I had enough to do this mosaic. And then a parent brought me this art contest. It was a national thing with American Girl doll. And it was a grant to the school. And I said, okay, we'll do it for that. And so we started gluing these pencils, and we glued them all straight up so that it was called Elevate the Arts. So we wanted it to go straight up. And I told these 3rd graders, we're going to make all those pencils point to God. so that they really could understand where I wanted those pencils pointed. Even if it was an angled thing like these radiating lines, they wanted to make the pencils point to the point to the vanishing point, and I wanted the pencils to be straight up and down. So we got it all done, and we submitted. It was a digital upload. We submitted, and we won. So we won a $2,500 grant to the school. And it was this image, but it was made out of pencils instead of paint. So pretty awesome. Those kids are now going into seventh grade, and it still hangs in my studio because they didn't make us give it up. And so it hangs in there, and it's kind of a focal point for everybody. Okay, middle school. Middle school students complete 12 to 14 projects per year, plus one field trip to an art museum. I have been a docent at the Portland Art Museum for 22 years, so I lead the tours myself because I spent the time to get all that training. But if you are not a docent, if you're a full-time teacher, of course you're not a docent, make sure you get a docent when you go to the museum. They have spent lots of time preparing the tour, and they do the tour with question and answers just like you treat your classroom. So make sure you get a docent. They have lots of backstories, and it's really fun. The middle school students serve at the high school art show. So I call them black aprons. I have black aprons. They wear white shirts and dark pants, and they walk around and serve drinks and cookies, and they do the cleanup and the setup. And it's their service project to get into the Junior National Art Honor Society. It's pretty fun. So some projects. I, at seventh grade, start a sketchbook requirement. Sketchbook requirement counts as one full project in their grade in my gradebook part, so it is required. It's all homework. It's about 5 minutes a week. So sometimes they complain, but a sketchbook is super important in art. It teaches observation, and I make them, you can't make stuff up or copy. When I first started doing this, I got a lot of Disney stuff in the sketchbooks. I said, Walt Disney was an artist. His stuff is copyrighted. So no copying anything. It has to be from observation. It can be the light switch in your bedroom. It's only 5 minutes a week. So I make sure that they understand. So 7th and 8th graders have to do 2 pages in their sketchbook every other week. So it's just 1 page a week, right? And I collect them every other week and give them points. It's about 4 times a quarter. Are you all on quarter systems or trimesters? Everybody quarters? My school is switching to trimesters next year. It's the first time, so I don't know how that's going to work, but it's less grading, so yay. Fewer report cards to write. We'll see how that goes. So the sketchbook, I encourage them to sometimes put the time of day, the lighting conditions in their sketchbook. If they're going to use it for a future painting, go ahead and journal that in. If you're there with a group, journal that in because it'll show a distraction level with the groups, or if you're by yourself. So, you know, just all that kind of stuff. And I have an actual handout that I give to the students that I can email to you, too, if you're on that list. You just have to tell me what you need, if you want this presentation or if you want my other stuff, if you want to email me. Using line and shape with the older students, 7th graders have to do this grid project, which I happen to know because I have friends who are public school teachers. This is a 9th grade project in the public school. I do it at 7th grade. I give them a 9 by 12 inch piece of paper, and they have to grid it off in 1 inch squares, so there's 108 squares, and they have to use a different line or shape or shading pattern in each square so that I can see that they have an arsenal of 108 different lines or shapes or all of that. Embedded in that, I need to see an image, so you need to make the edges of the image darker or lighter so that I can see something. Most of the students wear their eyes. They don't use actual line, and I don't grade them down if they don't use lines and shapes. They just draw the eyes in those grids. Kids love and hate this project. They love it the first day. They hate it the next day. And by the 5th time they're working on it, they love it again. Waiting for you to take your picture. That's good. Using ink dot as a form of shading. Pointillism is the real words for this, but we love the ink dot. Closer together makes a darker shade. Further apart makes lighter. I let them lightly pencil this in first, and then they have to erase all their pencil lines. The one on the left was in this last month's Classical Difference magazine. I don't know if you saw that one, but I submit things to them all the time, and sometimes they put it in. The student got $10 for doing that. She was excited. I pulled her up in assembly and said, "You won $10. She was pretty excited. Seventh grade. Both of these are seventh grade. This one I do in seventh and eighth grade or one or the other. It's just another design tool. And this one is great for the boys in particular or girls who are really more analytical because I give them graph paper to start, so they have a base to start. And they can overlap. They can use a combination of markers and colored pencils to overlap designs or interlock the designs. It's a really great one to give an A-plus to a student who has really struggled with some freeform drawing. I get a different kid that will excel in this than excelled in the ducks, a whole different group of kids. So that's really fun. So then they get their stuff on the bulletin board or the school gallery or whatever you have there. I have both. I have a gallery and a bulletin board. Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't model this one. I give them, by seventh and eighth grade, I give them seven or eight samples of what I'm looking for and then let them do it. Occasionally, there'll be a step-by-step. If it's really super brand new that I don't think that they'll get without me doing a step-by-step, then I'll do it on the board on a piece of paper of mine. That is an excellent question. With all of the internet access that we have, it's really easy to find lots of samples that other kids have done or other teachers have done, so I can show them six or seven samples in 5 minutes. If I model it, it'll take half of the period. So sometimes I'm bound by that, as you are. You're bound by time. So sometimes that's it. I do have a scanner in my classroom, and so I scan all of the kids as their best work, and I also scan some work that's slightly under the best so that they can see that this is what will get you a B, and this is what will get you an A. And at first glance, it might look kind of the same, but this one has cleaner edges. You know, the lines are closer together, that kind of stuff, so I can show them the difference between a B and an A. Yes? Yes. So the question was, do I let them draw the image as well as all of their lines? So I make them grid it out first, get their 108 squares, and then lightly draw the image, and then work your lines and patterns in. Mm-hmm. Yep. But I ask them to make sure that I can't see the evidence of that. Definitely allowed. I let them use all their tools. Yeah. Okay. So into curriculum matching. I'll go back to 7th and 8th grade in high school in a few minutes, but curriculum matching. We all study ancient Egypt. We start in second grade. We do it again in seventh and again in ninth grade. So I have Egyptian projects for all of those years. This one is just an oil pastel of King Tut. Did I have this as a handout? Okay. But I can send it to you because this is a great one. I love this one. It's the first thing they do in second grade at the beginning of the year. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. This one is a pretty fun one. This one is for a U.S. history year at my school at sixth grade. So they're studying all the states and the presidents and into civil rights movement. So they start, you know, we start with Harriet Tubman at the beginning of the year, and they're getting to Rosa Parks at the end of the year. So I have... You can see the little line drawings. I did those line drawings. I don't expect the kids to do those. So I copy those on a thick paper And then they color them with crayons, which I have to go hunt for crayons. I don't have crayons in my classroom. So even though I title it From Crayons to Rembrandt, that's lame, isn't it? I should add crayons to my list. So they color it with crayons and then crumple it all up so it fits in their hands, and it cracks the wax so that the paint can go in. And then paint the whole thing with tempera paint, and then wash the whole thing in tubs, and then lay it out flat to dry. And it's really a fun bulletin board because it shows all of these people, and I even have a few more. I've added Wilma Rudolph to this. I've added, I don't know, I have like 7 or 8 now famous people that have been part of this movement. So it's a really great one. The sixth grade homeroom teacher loves it, because it kind of brings, we do it at the end of the year, and it brings together her whole year of curriculum with this art project. So she loves this project. And I love it when I can make a classroom teacher happy. Yes. You have to color it. Yeah, you push really hard. So it's a black and white line drawing when the kids get it. So they have to color in the skin and the color of the dress and the sleeves and the background and the color of hair. And if something is white, they need to color it with a white crayon, because we are going to literally cover the entire thing with paint. You don't want brown teeth. So they have to color it if it has to be white. I use tempera paint. You can use watercolor paint if you're started on watercolor paper, which I do that project too. But I don't, for this one, I don't start on watercolor paper because it's too hard to crumble. I just use a thicker drawing paper. Sixth grade. In my school, that's when we do U.S. history, is sixth grade. We do the crossing and start U.S. history in fifth grade. So they start with explorers and all of that. And they read Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And then they get into the Native American study. And I have an extensive curriculum on Native Americans. That's my specialty at the Portland Art Museum. So if you need information or projects for Native Americans, we do button blankets, we do feathers, we do basket weaving in fifth grade, lots of things like that. In sixth grade, right after we do this project, the culmination of all of her civil rights and all of those movements, the kids read The Hiding Place by Corrie Ten Boom, and we make a book that has hidden drawers in it. So it's an 8-page book, so they draw the pages of the book, and then I make them make the drawers and the boxes that hold the drawers, so they're getting some spatial, three-dimensional spatial practice and measuring all these. I do the cutting for them, but they have to measure how far up to fold and all that kind of stuff. So it takes forever. It's like, I think they spent 5 weeks. I thought it would take them 3 weeks, and there was one of the exceptions where I miscalculated because I could do it so quick. And because they were making the boxes and we had to let glue dry, and then they were drawing the pictures and then putting it all together. But it ended as a really great project at the end of the year. They all had these beautiful little books. It's fun stuff. That was new for me this year, so I don't have any instructions for you. Here's one of the explorer things that we do in fifth grade. I take nautical maps. I had a friend who had a... Nautical maps are all loaded on software now, so are aeronautical maps. And so they don't use these gigantic maps anymore, so a lot of these places give them to me for free. They still make them big, but then they scan them and load them onto all their software stuff. So I use real nautical maps, and I show the kids the water depths are in the nautical map. And in an aeronautical map, it's the numbers on it are the heights of the mountains. And it changes with erosion and all of that. It changes every 5 years, so they all go out of date. So there's lots of them available. And then they paint right over the top of it. This is a sixth grade project for their geography lesson. This is regular sewing thread, double threaded. And I give them a backwards map that's glued on the back of black tag board. And they embroider the entire United States. And I give them 6 weeks in class. The rest of it is done at home. So I give it to them the day before Thanksgiving break, so they have Thanksgiving break to work on it. Then they come back, we work on it in class for 2 or 3 weeks, then they have Christmas break to work on it. And then they come back and we work on it in class 2 or 3 more weeks, and then it's due. So it's about a 60-day project. So I tell them to sow one state of day. And I just traced a regular U.S. map and flipped it over and retraced it and ran it through the copy machine to get my backwards map. Some people ask me, are the holes in the center punched at the state capitol? No. It would be genius if I would have done that. But the problem with that is places like Florida, you don't want to cut off a corner of the state. And since you're going from the center to the outside edge border, you have to put the hole where it's going to do the least crossover. Sometimes it works in the capital, but not in every state. It kind of looks like it, but even Oregon's not right, and that's my state. I punched the hole at Eugene, and our capital's in Salem. They're only about 60 miles apart. Anyway, this is a great project. And this one, once they do it, they finish it at the end of January, and it stays on display in the hall for the rest of the year because everybody loves this project so much. Sixth grade for me. It's the U.S. history year, whatever year that is for your school. This one is medieval studies. We do it in fourth grade, eighth grade, and 10th grade. So I spend 8 weeks on this project. We start with the illuminated letter. So they draw the letter. I get the little gold illuminating pens for the fourth graders. So I don't use real gold. For the 10th graders, we use real gold leafing so that they learn the technique of gold leafing. But for fourth grade, we use just the gold pen, which looks like real gold. So they're happy. So they do an 8-inch square letter. And then that takes about 2 to 3 weeks, depending on how much time you have. And then I teach them calligraphy. I have a class set of calligraphy pens, and we dip in the ink. And I teach them just like you teach penmanship. I teach them one letter at a time. They ask me, how do you do ducks? I say one feather at a time. How do you do calligraphy? And I say one letter at a time. So we practice and practice and practice and practice and practice. And then we pull the two together, and they write this Bible verse and do another illuminated letter. So that this is what goes on display as their culmination of that. Fourth grade for me. On this one, I don't know when you do. Okay, high school. My high school classes are complicated in their timing. Ninth grade is still required, so it's 90 minutes a week for ninth grade. I have an advanced art elective, which is an additional 90 minutes. And then for half the year, they can take a fine arts elective, which is an additional 90 minutes. So some students I might see 3 times a week. And some I might just see once a week. So I say 10 to 14 projects. I'm really flexible on that. Some kids can get done way faster than that, and some kids might only get 7 done, but they're really good 7, so I'm good with that. They have to read a book, either Art in the Bible by Francis Schaeffer, Art for God's Sake by Philip Graham Ryken. And I'm choosing a new one for this year to add to it, so they have to read one of these books and write a response paper. Has anybody read these books before? Good. So these books are really validating to artists. Talks a lot about how artists are called by God. Which when I was growing up, people would say, oh, you're just an artist. It's like we're not smart. It's like, are you kidding me? I have to know so much about so many different subjects. And so these two books are very validating for artists. I'm running out of time, so I'm going to kind of go faster. These are the covers. Eighth Day Books out in the hall has these books on display. The one called Christmas Doll is one I illustrated. And I just put it in here for fun, and Eighth Day Books does have it out there. It's a really beautiful Christian. If you're an elementary school teacher, this one is a beautiful Christian story about giving. About a second, third grade reading level. Okay, the sketchbook requirement for high school is about the same. I give them a bigger book. By the time they're into the advanced class, they have to do 4 pages every other week instead of 2, but the requirements are the same. I'm teaching, by ninth grade, I'm teaching on painting on non-traditional surfaces, so that would be maps, the suede again, painting on sand, this drippy one in the middle, it's really hard to see, but I think it's easier on the handout, is on sand. I have lots of different wood. I collect old fence boards. We paint on plexiglass. I've painted on metal before. You can paint on anything if you have the right paint. And I save that. You can do it with any age, too, by the way. But I save it for the upper-level high school students because it is so different, and it is sometimes more expensive. And I want kids, since I teach them all, there need to be milestones, right? It's like a uniform change. You don't get to do that until you are this age, even though I know they probably could. Portraits by high school are looking like this. I start portraits in third grade. Some figure drawing. Painting, the one on the left is an acrylic painting, the one on the right is a watercolor. These are some very textural ones, the top two landscapes, the bottom one's watercolor again. Contests. So our local kennel club has an art contest when they have their regional dog show. So it's super, super fun. They give us hundreds of free tickets, and they give the kids Best Buy gift cards, which is a great prize for them. So my philosophy on contests is it needs to be grant-based or some sort of cash prize for the students that they can spend. Community involvement, so scholastic and congressional art contests. Every congressman has their own art contest. The winner's artwork hangs in the Capitol building for a whole year. It's a very hard contest for classical schools to win because they tend to go for things that are very controversial and socially charged, a lot of gay rights or homelessness. That usually wins. However, this year, in my district in Beaverton, Oregon, they chose a photograph coming from a school that celebrates the good, the true, and the beautiful, and one of my students won. And we've entered like 10 times, and this year is the first year, so... they had the reception last night in Washington, D.C. My student went there last night, so she got to go. And they celebrated 430 high school artists as they hung their pictures on the wall in the Capitol building. So it's pretty fun, and in just a second you'll see the one that won. It's photography. So scholastic and congressional art contests are just for community involvement. The kids do win some little prizes, but it's really not the reason I do it, because they pick such controversial things. Same with scholastic. But we want to show that we are who we are, and it's important that we be in the world. The Vans competition is shoes. It's a $50,000 grant for your school art department. $50,000. We've never won. We've come close. We've been a finalist 8 out of the last 9 years. Never won. But it'll come someday, right? And, of course, ACCS. So the dog show, these are some of my kids who have won the Rose City Classic Dog Show. It could be anything in your town that has an art contest. The art contest, as a teacher, they give me a deadline and subject matter to teach. I don't need it, but it is fun for the kids. Here's the duck stamp contest. And they have a website, and you can get all the information for their website. I do have to kind of speed up here. I'm sorry. Here's the congressional art competition. The people in the picture, the lady on the right is our congresswoman, and the young lady on the left is my student. And she did a photograph. It was just a metal grate over a slough on her vacation. She just took the picture. She knows I love lines and shadows and highlights, and she had gone through all my lessons on line and contrast and all that kind of stuff, and did this picture. Here's the Vans. See, these are some of our shoes that we have submitted and not worn. But they're beautiful, aren't they? And we use a combination of markers, paints, mostly Sharpies. Most of them are demo Sharpie. The ones with the black soles on the bottom are mostly paint because the black, to get the soles black, we had to use paint. But all the rest of them, I think, are markers. The Vans will send them to you for free if they approve your school. So you have to sit in January. You have to apply to be in the contest. And they check out your school website, your credentials and all that, make sure that you are who you are and you're not just trying to get free shoes. And then they send you 4 pairs of free shoes that are solid white. And you decorate them and upload images. You get to keep the shoes. Unless you win, I think you have to give them up. But I have hundreds of pairs of shoes in my studio. Scholastic Art Contest this year, one of my students won a National Silver Award. But most of the time we just have 1 or 2 golds. It's not something that I count on winning, but Scholastic is a great, they have a writing contest also if you happen to teach writing or if your colleagues want to do it. It's nice. It's a nice contest. I do teach fused glass and mosaic because I do have a kiln. It's easy to fuse glass if you have a kiln. It's very hard if you don't. Glass mosaic is easy, but here's some of the clay stuff that we do. The pottery wheel I just do in the summer. I teach teach all summer. I start Monday when I get back. So the pottery wheel is one of those things you have to sign up in the summer because it takes up too much room to put in my studio during the school year. So we do great things. The houses and the leaf bowls and stuff we do during the year. Sometimes I do clay bugs for an insect lesson. I do bugs out of clay and fire them. We do beautiful things, that kind of thing. No. I'm sorry. I have to say that because I'm a fine artist. Air dry clay falls in that craft category. Yes. I haven't yet. I did have a student years ago that really liked that. And you know what she did? She collected that waxy stuff off of the cheese. What is it? Baby bells or something. And that's a great one. If you can get, it's a really good one and you can reuse it. Lots of people do use lots of those things, but I can't. One reason is I don't have time. I don't have a lot of sculptural electives, but it's not that I'm not interested in that. Although the air-dry clay, I've never found one that was really great. It's always kind of gritty, and so I don't like that. Sometimes a Sculpey with younger kids where it's oven-baked clay can be fun, especially with insects or little things that you want to augment your classroom study, but the air-dry clay, not so much. I do paper mache. We do mummies with paper mache. It's not that I'm opposed to all craft, but I'm not a crafty person. I like crafts. If you're not members of the National Art Honor Society, you should be. Yeah, this is the last slide. We end with an annual fine arts show, which is the induction ceremony for our Art Honor Society. I give out ribbons, and then we choose our school champion, which then comes to the ACCS contest. We have a string ensemble at our school. They play. AP. Anybody interested in AP? That's going to be a different conversation, probably. I can tell you how to get that started in your school. We offer AP, but I rarely have a student that actually does it because they don't get that much college credit for it. And it's really hard. The AP studio is really hard, but I do have all the information if you want it. So this is all that AP information. There's my email again if you don't have it on your thing, but I think you do. Any last-minute questions? Because they're waving at me at the door to get out. To bring them up to speed. I kind of pull them up next to me, and I give them separate projects. And it's really accelerated, but it kind of goes back to some of the things I do in second, third, and fourth grade, like with shading or the ink dots or something like that, to make sure. And I ask them, have you ever done this before? No, I'm homeschooled and I've never done it before. So, okay, so this is what you do. And as soon as you finish that, I want you to do this one, and then you can start doing what we're doing. So I do try to catch them up. I saw another hand a minute ago. Yes. At the high school, they get to choose, and especially if they're in one of the elective classes, I let them choose a concentration. I've got one girl that only works in ink, and it's working for her, and she's creating beautiful things. Still have a couple of really advanced students that want to do one of everything every year, and so it just depends on the kid and. Yeah, for. What I usually do is I want you to do one painting and one drawing. That's required. If we get further than that, then And everybody does a clay and a glass one, too, somewhere in there. Kate, any other questions? Yeah. I use the most expensive paper that my budget will allow. With professional projects, they're going to learn a lot faster. And so if you want them to create better work faster, spend more money. Art supplies, you get what you pay for, and I'm sorry to have to say that, but because I don't get paid by any art supply maker at all. There's a couple places where I have learned to cut corners. Acrylic paint is one where I can cut corners. Paper, I cannot cut corners with paper. I have a generous budget, but I know not everybody does. Any other questions? You can meet me in the back because the next speaker has to set up for the thing. Thank you.